in which the theme of the program is work and how it's working. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Thursday today, the 20th day of January. Good, as always, to have you along. You know, just when you think you've got the labor market in this now two-year-old pandemic economy figured out, it goes and turns the tables on you. Although, at this point, shame on me, I guess. But if this is Thursday, that means we're talking first-time claims for unemployment benefits, people getting laid off mostly, up last week to 286,000, higher than it has been in months. See also the aforementioned tables being turned thing. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going with the latest on this crazy mixed-up labor market.
I saw a morning in pandemic America in microcosm earlier today when I called up one of our regular experts on unemployment, Andrew Stettner of the Century Foundation. I caught him at home watching his kids because their school called a snow day.
That's ridiculous. It's just raining, but they call it at night.
The timing isn't great.
We have a babysitter, but she actually has COVID, so she has to take, 10 days off.
And there you have two key factors driving jobless claims higher: COVID and the weather. The recent surge in Omicron cases is keeping people out of work. And Stettner says there are also seasonal effects we typically see in winter.
Layoffs in industries like construction in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, layoffs in automotive in Missouri and Michigan.
Now, Stettner says the current level of jobless claims is still consistent with a growing, recovering economy. But there are some worrying signs, says Mark Hamrick at Bankrate.
Consumers are pulling back on some spending or cannot do certain things. Think about the interruption in Broadway performances. And then there are the situations also where enterprises are entering, here it is, year number three of the pandemic, and essentially throwing in the towel.
And as Omicron has surged, people's confidence in their economic situation has deteriorated, says John Lear at polling firm Morning Consult.
So we've had this fairly pronounced increase in job insecurity in the share of adults indicating that they lost pay or income at any point during the prior week.
Lear suspects the actual level of job loss right now is even higher than today's jobless claims report indicates because a lot of workers have run out of benefits. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, everything was great till it wasn't. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Jobs and work in this economy can be analyzed in a whole lot of ways. One of them is industry by industry, and our industry of choice today is home building. There's some new data out today from the National Association of Realtors, which shows sales of existing homes slowed just a bit last month, but for all of 2021, those home sales reached a 15-year high. And I think I mentioned this yesterday, that home building rose unexpectedly in December. Housing starts and building permits were both up, despite the supply chain messiness and in spite of a shortage of skilled workers. As Marketplace's Amy Scott reports, it is a job seeker's market out there.
Daniel Pignon had been making around $15 an hour, washing dishes and doing temp jobs, when he decided to make a change.
The demand is huge. The opportunities are great. The moment is now.
That's a promotional video for the Colorado Home Building Academy in Denver. Last fall, Pignon signed up for its 8-week construction skills boot camp. Now he's about to start a new job helping build modular homes, earning twice as much.
I'll be making $29.50 an hour. And then there's great opportunity also.
Opportunity to advance and get more training paid for by his employer, plus medical and dental benefits and a 401k.
Yeah, it's a spectacular time to go into the construction industry because the lack of employees.
He's right. Job openings in construction have been at record highs, partly because more people are quitting, as they are all over the economy, but also because there's more demand.
housing already had a labor shortage in 2019, and new home sales are up 13% since then.
Allie Wolf is chief economist at the housing research firm Zonda. To compete for workers, she says home builders are raising pay and benefits, offering signing and retention bonuses, and resorting to other tactics.
You have employers that will walk onto a job site, ask the construction workers, what are you making? And then say, okay, I can pay you $2 more an hour if you come with me.
And who can blame them if they do? Henry Beebe is director of construction with Gracemark Homes in Texas. He says the destruction from Hurricane Ida in Louisiana last summer has added to the challenge of finding and keeping workers.
Being in the Houston market, anytime something like that happens there, we discover that a lot of the crews will run to those markets where they're being paid double and triple sometimes.
He says he was about to start building one house recently and confirmed with a crew the day before.
And the following morning, find out that they ate dinner the night before and drove to Louisiana and just didn't show up.
And when one crew doesn't show up, others can't do their jobs, further slowing a process already mired in supply chain delays. But these are temporary challenges on top of a more systemic problem. The construction workforce is aging.
And those retiring folks walking out the door aren't being replaced by the same amount of young people standing at the door wanting in.
That's Wade Heiner with Destiny Homes in Des Moines, Iowa. In addition to running sales and marketing for the builder, he recruits at local high schools.
I tell any student, you want to talk to me about any sort of job opportunity in the trades, I'll take that time. Because honestly, it's the biggest gap that we have in our industry right now. And if we don't get it fixed, we're headed for trouble.
Talking up construction jobs is one thing. Even better, making the jobs themselves more appealing. Ed Brady is CEO of the Home Builders Institute, a nonprofit career training group. He says while construction wages are up 7% from a year ago, he thinks they should be higher.
We still haven't, as an industry, recognized the need to be competitive in the marketplace. And so we need to continue to look at ways to offer benefits, to offer the career path and stability. And I would say we still have some work to do in that.
That last part, stability in a cyclical industry, is key. Daniel Pignon, the one starting a new job in Denver, had worked in construction before, but like many, left the industry when the housing market crashed. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
The CDC wants us to wear better masks. That was the updated guidance last Friday, N95 or KN95, if you can do it. But in the world of masks, as with much of life, I suppose, all is not as it seems. And that is why I wound up on a Zoom yesterday with a guy by the name of Aaron Collins.
I'm a mechanical engineer with a background in aerosol science. I'm a self-described mask nerd.
Oh, Aaron Collins is not just a mask nerd. He is something of a mask expert these days, given that he's tested literally hundreds of them using a particle counter that he bought on eBay as kind of a public service hobby project.
So I've been using my bathroom, a.k.a. my laboratory, using real scientific equipment to try to test and evaluate masks, and then sharing all that on my YouTube channel and an ever-growing Google Doc.
All right, good. So let's turn this into something useful here. And I'm going to, first of all, hold up my trusty KN95, which honestly, I mean, now that I look at it, it's a little dirty because I've been using it for a while. And maybe the ear straps are a little stretched out. But it's your typical, you know, it's that white cone-shaped one that makes you look like a duckbill sort of whatever. Is this okay for me to be using?
I mean, the answer is maybe, depending on where you got it from. So that's kind of the challenge with the mask marketplace right now, is that it's not really clear about what are really high-performing masks, which masks don't meet the standard, and which ones are just straight-up fakes. It's hard to tell just by looking at a mask. That's kind of the problem with it.
How am I supposed to know? I'm just a guy trying to wear a mask and be safe and keep everybody else safe.
I think this is the million-dollar question that everyone's trying to answer at the same time. In general, there's some things we can look for, right? So when we talk about KN95s, KF94s, and N95s. KN95 is kind of unique in this space in that it's just a Chinese test standard. There's not really any regulatory oversight to them. Whereas like KF94s.
Okay, so let me just say that that's not heartening, that it's just a Chinese test standard, because we know about Chinese tests in a lot of ways and there's no real standard for them.
Well, that's a good point. But they do have a test standard and they do have to use labs. So oftentimes a KN95 may actually have met the test standard.
Okay.
But they only have to submit 20 pieces. And then the next 10,000, was there any quality checks? There's our regulated masks, like KF94 out of South Korea and our NIOSH N95 standard. Yeah. Those are regulated masks, meaning not only do you have to meet these test standards, your factory has to meet all these quality and process checks along the way to make sure you're making a consistent product.
I'm looking at my KN95 pretty closely now for the first time since we set up this interview, and it doesn't say approved by or standardized tested by. I mean, it's just there. It says KN95 on the side, and that's that.
And that's kind of the problem, too, is actually the test standard is kind of specific as to the labeling of the mask. They do require that you say KN95, so you've met that first one. But the next check is that they require you to label it with this test standard, and that standard is the GB2626 and then dash 2019. Of course, engineers love their numbers,
right? Of course.
And so what that means is that you expect to see both of those things stamped onto the mask, but you're only seeing one of them. So right away, we know that that mask didn't actually comply to the KN95 standard as it's written.
Oh, my goodness. And we've got a cabinet full of them at home. All right. So look, so let's say I decide to go mask shopping and I go to everybody's favorite e-commerce site. And what do I type in? KN95, N95, mask? What do I do?
Let's do KN95, right? That's the most ubiquitous search term right now happening in Amazon.
KN95. And there's a zillion of them.
Yeah, and they all look very similar, right?
Yeah, they sure do.
They're called bifolds. They're, you know, some are black, some are white.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of these Amazon-only brands, their branding is what effectively is five random letters. We see that all the time. The WW doll. Really? So you really don't have a way to chase down, is this the company that actually made it, or are they just rebranding someone else's mask?
What about those ones that are like these? They're not bifold, but they're almost trifold, right? I think those are the Korean F94s, right?
Yeah, KF94s. All those right. are one of my favorite masks. We can search that on Amazon too.
Yeah, let me do that.
So if you just search KF94, those are these kind of boat shape. And so here we see, again, a lot of sponsored content for these very similar looking masks.
Yep.
One of the requirements of KF94 is that they have to have a physical presence or be manufactured in South Korea, meaning that they have to source from there. And so if we look at some of these, and maybe we'll find one, if we pick, you know, some random one, like there's this 50 pieces for $20, right? 3D
this
fish
right here,
type KF94. Let's click on it.
All right.
So that seems like a really great deal. If we look on the right side of the screen, who is it sold by and who's it shipped by? So this is sold and shipped by a company called Kasite.
Kasite, yeah.
Let's click it.
The business address is in China.
Yeah. So isn't that interesting that a KF94 would need to be manufactured and sold in South Korea or manufactured in South Korea? Why would they make it in South Korea, ship it to China to then ship to you? I don't think this is a real mask. And I see this everywhere. And if you look at the business name, now I don't speak Chinese, but that is a lot of characters all in a series.
No, it's a bunch of different words. And well, never mind. I won't go into my now limited Chinese because it's been a while. But look, let me ask you this. Here I am making a good faith effort. And it's not like I'm getting swindled, right? Because I'm getting something that in theory provides some degree of protection, but am I really protected?
And this is the real challenge with Amazon Marketplace and just masks in general right now. As a consumer, you can buy a mask and look at it. It might look real. It might smell real. It might have all the things that you've associated with your previous brand. But the only way to actually know is to use really specialty scientific equipment to measure that. And fake masks can range from something that's not terrible all the way to something that's a cloth mask. And that's the problem. You don't know what you're going to get when you buy the mask.
All right. So look, rather than dumping all over Amazon, if I'm a concerned mask consumer, is there a good place for me to go to not get swindled on my masks?
Yeah, there are some really good websites out there. So Project N95.
Okay. Hang on.
Yeah, no problem.
Oh, the National Clearinghouse for Personal Equipment. There you go.
Yeah. So Project N95 is a nonprofit that's set up originally to help distribute PPE to healthcare workers.
Yeah.
And they've expanded to try to kind of emulate the Amazon Marketplace, where you'll see a lot of different masks from a different suppliers. The only challenge right now is that because everyone wants masks
supply
at the same time.
For sure.
It's very tight right now.
For sure. To be clear, you're not getting a kickback from these guys. This is not a sponsored endorsement on your part, right? This is the trained professional?
That is correct. I have no financial obligation to any mask manufacturer, vendor. I've never taken any payment. I've done all of this out of my own pocket just simply to try to help people.
Aaron Collins on how to shop for masks, what some of the problems are. He is, as he says, the mask nerd. More on our website, marketplace.org, of course. Aaron, thanks a lot. Really appreciate your expertise.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We did call Amazon, by the way. They sent us a whole statement, the relevant part of which goes like this. We have implemented, Amazon says, a rigorous seller vetting and product review process to ensure compliance with applicable laws, regulations, and Amazon policies. Coming up.
Pretty sure I may have suppliers a little upset with me.
I guess we'll find out, huh? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial down 313 today, almost 0.9%, closed at 34,715. The useful factoid here is that at one point during the day, the Dow was up like 460 points. The NASDAQ shed 186 points, 1.3%, landed at 14,154. The S&P 500 gave back 50 points, about 0.1%. Ended things at 44 and 82. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics had a report out today on union membership in this economy. Found the number of wage and salary workers belonging to a union fell by about 241,000 to 14 million or so last year. The union membership rate in the United States, 10.3% of the labor force. You're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Mitchell was telling us earlier about first-time jobless claims, the highest they have been since the middle of October. And that does make one wonder, does it not, what this month's unemployment report is going to look like when it comes out in a couple of weeks. One of the legacies of this pandemic, certainly in the early days, and maybe now too, as Omicron does its thing to the workforce, is that people are dealing with huge gaps in their resumes. Women, certainly. Women of color in particular, who've dropped out or been forced out of the labor force the past 2 years. Marketplace's Lily Jamali has the current state of play on that.
For a long time, employers viewed holes in people's employment histories as a red flag. But Kelsey Bensky says that's changing.
They're having to be more accommodating, more flexible, not just to attract new workers, but also to retain the workforce that they have.
You can thank the pandemic for that, says Bensky, who supervises a career center in Newark, California. The labor shortage has given job seekers more options. She knows, because she's hiring too. Now, when she sees a gap on an applicant's resume,
it isn't as much of a concern for me anymore. I understand that there's a lot of reasons over the past 2 years that people may have left the workforce voluntarily or involuntarily. So I definitely am part of that shift.
Because of the pandemic, these gaps are now widespread, says Rhonda Vanshee-Sharp, a labor economist who heads the Women's Institute for Science, Equity, and Race.
A lot of folks across race, gender, ethnicity, class, educational attainment are going to have these gaps.
And that means they may lose some of their stigma, says Sharp. She says that gives female job seekers from marginalized backgrounds leverage they didn't have before.
I think employers who do not respond well to that are going to find themselves on the less desirable end when it comes to employment.
Hiring managers are looking at a broader range of applicants now, says UMass Boston economics professor Marlene Kim.
What I'm seeing is that although women of color and people of color still have higher unemployment rates than other workers, they seem to be getting hired at a higher rate than other workers.
That's if they want to get hired at all. Rhonda Vanshee-Sharp says when the pandemic is over, she expects many of these women will turn away from traditional jobs in favor of becoming their own bosses. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
All right, a different kind of workplace story now. Running a farm in a virus economy and the challenges that brings. The people at the Center for Commercial Agriculture at Purdue University say the biggest worry for farmers right now is input prices, what those farmers have to pay for all the stuff they put in the ground. Seeds, sure, but fertilizer, chemicals, the whole thing. And that, of course, was our cue to get April Hemmings on the phone. She is our corn and soybean farmer out of Iowa. April.
Well, how are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
Oh, it's not this morning. It's this afternoon. I'm freezing, but doing okay. Came from 80 degree weather yesterday to about 20 below wind chill factor today. So,
where were you yesterday?
So I got to go to Dubai and yeah, they had an oil and meal processors conference. So I told them how I sustainably raise soybeans on my farm and pretty good gig until you come home to snow and freezing weather.
I was just going to ask, you know, you've been globetrotting, but how is it down on the farm? I mean, how's the farm business, as it were? Granted, it's the middle of winter, but still.
Yes, it is the middle of winter, but right now I prepay everything. So right before I left, I paid for a bunch of my seed. And that price surprisingly hadn't gone up as much, but nitrogen is a whole nother story. All of our inputs, like everybody's grocery store bills, are higher. Well, yeah. The farmers are the same way. So
can you get everything you need? I mean, well, wait, so let's back up. Why are prices higher? Is it just demand or what?
Well, I tell you what, I don't know. And I was looking, I talked to my fertilizer and chemical guy.
Yeah.
So I pay 32 cents a unit for my nitrogen a year ago. This year I wrote the check, it was over 60 cents. So it doubled.
Wow.
And if I would have waited until this spring when they apply it, it's over $1 a unit now. And that's just nitrogen for the corn. Last year, I paid around $20 a gallon for Roundup, and this year, it's almost $75 a gallon.
That's insane. Do you recover any of that on the back end? I mean, does your price per bushel go up or no?
Well, see, that's just it. Our prices are dictated by, like, if it's grain, the Chicago Board of Trade. If you're raising cattle or hogs, depends on if you have a contract with a packer or whatever. But we don't get to say, hey, I need $6 a bushel for my corn in order to make break even. That's not reality. So, you know, I hope none of the consumers out there listening are blaming the farmers for the high prices in the grocery store, because, you know, we're realizing the same thing.
So it's got to be a supply chain thing, right? There's got to be so much demand, or there's reduced supply.
Well,
no?
Can I say the word greed in here? I don't know.
You may.
Sure I may have suppliers a little upset with me, but there's very few people that actually produce the nitrogen. So, you know, they can kind of set the prices. And we are having troubles. My supplier can only guarantee me 80% of the Roundup or certain kind of chemicals I can get. So
what's the
fortunately?
No, go ahead. What? Fortunately, what?
Well, fortunately, you know, I will be making money if these prices stay up, but that's a big if.
Right. What's the word around the coffee shop? I mean, are your neighbors in the same boat? They must be. Are they changing anything?
Oh yeah, they're all in the same boat. When I talk to my seed guys, as I lovingly call them.
You got a guy. You got a chemical
guy.
You got a seed guy.
I got lots of guys.
You know a guy.
I said, so are farmers switching to planting more soybeans? Because the fertilizer prices are mainly for corn. Soybeans don't need a lot of inputs. Huh. And they said, yeah, they are seeing more soybean sales, which for Iowa, unheard of. We love to plant corn here.
How long till you get to start putting seeds in the ground?
Beginning middle of April, but we need moisture. We're still dry. So, so hopefully things are all going to be better by then, Kai. Can you work on that for me?
I will do the best, the very best I can for you. April Hemme, she's our corn and soybean farmer out in Iowa, telling us the stories. April, thank you so much.
You bet.
This final note on the way out today brought to you by the letters CBDC. And yes, I know we've been doing a lot of initials lately, but look, I don't make the news. Anyway, CBDC, Central Bank Digital Currency, the subject of a 40-page paper out today from the Federal Reserve. Electronic cash, basically, yes, but electronic cash backed not by banks, which is what people are using now, but electronic cash backed by the Fed, just like a dollar. Is now. This is a really fast-moving part of the digital economy, but we and the Fed are a long way from anywhere on this. The report the central bank put out today says they are not going to do anything on CBDCs without support and direction from Congress and the executive branch as well. All right, we're out of here, but here is your moment of economic context. You know how sometimes we talk about after-hours trading? Not a lot, but sometimes, because interesting things can happen after the bell. Well, here's your case in point. Netflix today, off 1.5% during the session. Fine, whatever that happens, it was a down day. After hours, and after Netflix reported earnings and that it added fewer subscribers than everybody had been expecting, including itself, shares down another 19. I'm looking at it right now, 19.48% as I stand here. So there you go. Amir Babawe, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, and Diantha Parker are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.